Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. On April 5, 2011, freelance journalist James Foley was captured by Gaddafi forces while on assignment to cover the revolution in Libya. During the ambush, one of his party, South African journalist Anton Hamerl, was killed. Foley, who graduated from Marquette University in 1996, and fellow American journalist Claire Gillis were beaten and then imprisoned by pro-Gaddafi forces for 6 weeks. They were released on May 19, 2011, thanks in part to an international campaign spearheaded by Foley's friends from Marquette, former colleagues at Teach for America, and family and childhood friends in New Hampshire. Foley returned to his alma mater last month to talk about his captivity, and we joined him on campus then. Jim, welcome to Lake Effect. It is such a pleasure to meet you and have you on the show.
Thanks for your time.
It takes a certain kind of personality to be willing to put yourself in the kind of danger that you do as a war correspondent. And I wanted to start there. What drew you to the kind of work? Why were you willing to take the risks?
Originally, I guess I went to Iraq for the first time as a journalist. It was actually my first assignment. I started journalism after teaching for about 8 years. And as my brother had been a soldier there the year before, actually with the Air Force, so I was kind of wrestling with the question of us being in Iraq as a country, but also with, you know, what he had been through, and I was opinionated, but now I said, well, let me actually experience it as a journalist.
So you had no journalism experience before that, really?
No, I was went back to school for a one-year program in 2007.
So how did you convince people to let you go, particularly into a war zone?
Well, it was a process. I had an excellent course called War and Reporting, and we talked to experienced reporters, and they said, you know, you can do this embed process that the military has set up. It's quite organized, and as long as you have some sponsors. So then I went to match with Indiana Guard. They were deploying a lot of soldiers, and I sort of went around to the local Indiana papers and contacted them, and, you know, as a freelancer, didn't hurt them too much to have somebody over there covering for the local paper. So it worked out.
And so during that experience, you filed for lots of different organizations.
Yeah, I filed for lots of Indiana papers and you know, for some websites and, you know, wrote my own blog. And it was a great experience.
How did that lead you to Libya?
I was doing Iraq, and then I went into Afghanistan, you know, as sort of our attention as a nation shifted to Afghanistan in 2010. I focused on Afghanistan. And when Libya started with the Arab Spring, it was just so fascinating. I went there sort of on my own and convinced my employer, Global Post, to, once I was on the ground, that they could take my stuff because right place, right time, I guess.
So you actually went completely without credentials from any kind of organization?
Exactly, yeah. There was hundreds of journalists coming in from all over the world to Libya, and I was one of them. And I was not there at the very beginning, but sort of in the mid-beginning. It was an interesting time because it was just when NATO was starting to bomb. So it was starting to really embolden the rebels and obviously really give them a chance.
What was your impression of the revolution at that point?
You need to take some time to see the revolution both from the front lines and from the cities and in the rallies and the civilians in the cities. And, you know, very quickly you could see that the front lines were very, very chaotic and that there was a lot of support, you know, amongst the civilian population for the revolution, and it had real legs.
This was a very different situation, though, than what you had been in Afghanistan and Iraq, because you weren't embedded and you weren't protected in that way. Did you ever, before you were captured, did you ever think, oh, I really have to watch out for this?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was not embedded, and there was no, you know, there was no rules, literally, in Libya at that time. There was no command structure, and these rebels didn't know their strategy would seem from one day to the next necessarily. So it was dangerous. And there was some close calls in which I told myself, hey, this is dangerous. This is, you know, you need to step on the brakes a little bit here. And it would work for a couple of days. I would go back and, you know, write up my stories or edit my videos and get in touch with what was going on maybe politically in Benghazi. And then I would go back out again and find myself pushing the limits again. So it was very much being drawn to this front, and it was it was dangerous, for sure.
Did you have a plan in mind, kind of in the back of your mind, thinking, well, if something goes south, this is what I need to try to do?
No, there was no plan, because that would be, you know, if something goes south, you're either wounded, dead, or captured. And, you know, fortunately, we were captured rather than wounded or killed right away. But the plan was usually stick to the rebel vehicle you're with. Hopefully they're, you know, you can trust them more than the average. And when they retreat, you're in the back. The problem was that that morning, we weren't close enough to the vehicle. And the gunfire was directly targeted at us. So,
who did they think you were?
You know, who knows? I've thought about it over and over again. Rebels don't wear uniforms. And, you know, they saw these people crushed to the ground, which we were. They very well might not have seen their camera, but I will say that no shots were fired at them. So clearly they were firing on somebody who was unarmed.
Now, how did you connect with the people that were both, there was one person killed and then three of you taken hostage. How had you all connected before the capture?
Myself, very early I connected on with Claire Gillis. She's an American journalist who was just actually finishing her PhD at Harvard and very interested in the Middle East. And so she got to Libya very early and was getting some good strings with USA Today and the Atlantic. Then I connected with Manu Bravo. He's a Spanish photographer, young but experienced Spanish photographer who'd worked in different conflict zones. And the last one to join our group was Anton Hamrell, who was killed. And he was a South African who had experienced a lot of conflicts and kind of grown up with the township in the, you know, the apartheid era, and covered that and, you know, had done African stuff, but had kind of, it seemed like he was trying to get back into conflicts, and Africa was the opportunity, because it was one of the first conflicts in Africa in a while that had world notice. You know, we only knew them for about 5 days.
Obviously, you know, being captured is a fear that all journalists have, and we've seen in recent years, you know, there's no reluctance on the part of whatever forces are interested of taking people hostage, killing them, you know, torturing them, whatever. When you were captured, were you afraid that you were going to die?
To tell you the truth, it's an abstract question, because it happened so quickly. In a matter of minutes, I believe, we were under serious fire, most serious fire of my life, and Anton was killed. And everything was pure instinct at that point. The only time I had to think, I had to decide to stand up and surrender. Now, that was probably the most dangerous time, because I could have been cut down there. They were very close out of their vehicles firing, and they immediately subdued us by hitting us with rifle butts and punches and tied us up. So did I think I was going to be executed? No. But I was very familiar with the New York Times story. They had been captured almost a month before, and I was very familiar. There were, you know, sustained beatings and threats. So I was expecting that.
And these were Gaddafi's forces that captured you.
Exactly. These were Gaddafi. These were young Gaddafi soldiers.
How were you treated in those 44 days?
It was progressively better. The first day was awful, both because we witnessed our colleague killed, because we were beaten, and there was so much uncertainty. But quickly, within a few hours, after we were taken to a sort of safe house in the town of Brega, we were captured. Somewhat senior soldiers showed up and sort of said, okay, everything's okay, and, you know, looked at our IDs and said, we're taking you to Sirte, Gaddafi's hometown. A few days later, we were moved to Tripoli, and, you know, we were in a prison system. We were in a prison system, but the prison system had been revamped to hold revolutionaries, and the court system had been revamped to hold revolutionaries, and they were processing hundreds and thousands of people, literally. And by the time we were in the last few weeks of our imprisonment, I was in a prison cell with, you know, about 8 other revolutionaries from around Tripoli and those cities in the West. And I saw that these people were never going to give up. And it was not a civil war. It was a true revolution in the sense that both sides of the country were united against Gaddafi.
Do you still keep in touch with any of the people that you met while you were imprisoned?
Yeah, that's a good question. I went back to Libya in the end of August and stayed for 2 months to continue to cover the very end of the revolution. And I was looking for my one friend whose name was Mahmoud. I was frustrated because the number he gave me from prison didn't work, of course. Then I got another number from a friend of a friend, and that didn't work. I didn't find him until the second to last day. And it was just such a treat to see him and to see him outside. And, you know, of course, he had become a revolutionary himself. He had the long beard and the camo and khaki fatigues. And he was driving around in a truck with a big anti-aircraft gun, like so many we had seen. But I had known him when he was sort of in prison and still an engineer and dreaming about getting his Toyota Camry back.
And so do you still stay in touch now that you're back here?
Yeah, you know, it was just great. We saw him. We got to share so many moments with different prisoners we had. And, you know, I said, Mahmoud, you know, I just wish I would have connected with you earlier when I came back. We could have done some stories together. I was at the front line. And, you know, he said, I checked on Facebook just to see if you were alive. Once I saw you were alive, I went back to the front line. So did you think of dropping me a message? You know, I feel that, you know, for everything that happened, Libya is now, it's inside me, and I will go back. And I just think it would be interesting in 6 months or a year. You know, how does the new government shake out?
Well, that is a question, because obviously you have firsthand knowledge of the revolution itself. And now that, you know, Gaddafi is dead and they're moving into this new government, you know, Libya is poised to rewrite their own history in a lot of ways. Are you hopeful that they will?
Yeah, I sure am. I think already the worst predictions, the most cynical predictions from the West have proven not true. You know, this idea maybe that some kind of Islamists are going to take over, that city will fight city. Yeah, there's tensions. There's plenty of tensions, especially somewhere under the surface. But I think the good thing about Libya is there's not serious divisions in sects, as in other countries like in Iraq. So they're, in that sense, they're all united in a faith. And also, you know, there's this idea that they do have a amount of wealth, and that if they can avoid, you know, this kind of bloodshed now, that the country, everyone is thinking, you know, these young kids want to get married. And let's face it, you know, there wasn't much opportunities to have an apartment, to have your own life, and now I think people are focused on that, you know.
You sort of answered this before, because you went back. Are you going to continue to do this work? Are the risks worth it even after what you went through?
Yes. I definitely learned, you know, that awful things can happen if you don't take precautions, and that risk-taking for the sake of risk-taking is foolish, and, you know, you're playing with your life and lives of others. But I'm still excited to go into conflict zones and try to cover them, and I think it's a close brotherhood and sisterhood of people that will support you, and it's fascinating until I really know in my gut that I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, James Foley, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with me this afternoon. I appreciate it, and welcome home.
Thank you. I hope to be home for a little bit this time.
James Foley is a freelance journalist and Marquette alumnus. He returned to Marquette last month to speak about his experience as a captive in Libya last spring, and we spoke with him then. Coming up next on Lake Effect, how the city of Milwaukee manages property foreclosures due to non-payment of property taxes. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Milwaukee Public Radio.